Contra Foundation presents The Contra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Okay, so here's something to think about. What if the biggest thing holding you back, you know, from reaching your potential, isn't actually out there? What if it's inside?
That's a really powerful question, and it ties directly into what we're exploring today. We're diving into ambition, expectations, personal drive.
All through the lens of someone pretty significant in modern leadership.
Exactly. We're talking about Sheryl Sandberg, you know, the American business exec, author, former COO of Facebook, which is Meta now, of course.
And specifically, we're focusing on her book from 2013, Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead, a book that really shook things up.
It absolutely did. This deep dive is all about figuring out why Lean In wasn't just like another business book. It really ignited something much bigger, a movement almost.
Right. Lean In. It's not just a straightforward book. It's this mix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Part her own story, part this pretty sharp analysis backed by data, looking at gender inequality at work.
And Sandberg herself, I mean, she's got the credentials, Harvard MBA, worked in the Treasury Department.
Became one of those powerful women in Silicon Valley, no question.
Yeah.
A major voice in what people started calling corporate feminism.
Which is basically pushing for equality and getting women ahead, but doing it within the existing corporate world.
Yeah, working inside the system.
Yeah.
And when Lean In came out, wow, it forced a lot of companies, especially in the U.S., to look at some uncomfortable stuff.
Definitely. Like why women weren't making it to the top leadership spots nearly as often as men. Think about it. 2013, women are nearly half the workforce.
But CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, tiny fraction. Like what was it? Barely 4%.
Exactly. So the book's big provocative idea, initially at least, was that women needed to stop holding themselves back to, you know, lean in.
And that phrase just took off.
Yeah.
But it also, well, it split opinions, didn't it? Some people saw her as this feminist icon.
Absolutely. But others were really critical, saying, you know, this advice is fine if you're privileged like her, but what about ordinary women?
Right. The whole critique about being disconnected from everyday struggles. So our mission here is to unpack all that. Why did it become such a big deal? Mm. Explore that tension, the support, and the criticism.
And try to understand its impact, which is complex and honestly still relevant today. It really gets at that core tension, individual action versus these bigger systemic problems.
A theme we'll definitely see running through her own life story. So where does her journey start?
Okay, so let's trace it back. Sheryl Sandberg, born 1969, North Miami Beach, eldest of three kids.
And her parents. What was the environment like growing up?
Father was an ophthalmologist, mother a college instructor, also a homemaker. Sounds like a home where achievement was definitely encouraged, high expectations.
But interestingly, you mentioned gender limits weren't really discussed explicitly.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, which, as you said, could be seen as both an asset later, but maybe also a blind spot, according to some critics.
She showed leadership potential early, though, right? Organizing things, doing well in school.
Oh, yeah. Apparently quite the organizer in the neighborhood, academically strong, signs were there.
But there's that one story from when she was young that seemed quite telling about her brother.
Right, the math problem anecdote.
Mm.
She's 11, her younger brother's stuck, she offers to help.
And he just dismisses her because she's just a girl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And apparently her parents didn't step in to correct him. She said that little moment, that dismissal, planted a seed, made her aware, maybe for the first time, of how gender could affect how people saw your abilities.
Wow. It's the small moments, isn't it?
Mm.
Really makes you think. Okay, so educationally, it's Harvard, but not without a hiccup.
That's right, Harvard undergrad, but she apparently got a C on her first economics exam.
A C. For someone like her, that must have been quite a blow.
Had to be humbling, yeah. But it seems like it was actually a key moment, forced her to deal with that fear of, you know, not being good enough.
And what did she learn from it?
Resilience, definitely.
Yeah.
And, crucially, the need to ask for help. She went to the TA, joined study groups, realized asking for help wasn't weakness, it was strength. That's a lesson she carried forward.
And Harvard is also where she met Larry Summers.
Yes, huge influence. Became her mentor, really saw her potential, encouraged her to go to grad school, later brought her into government.
And helped her navigate those, well, very male-dominated spaces.
For sure. Taught her how to operate, how to speak up confidently, yeah. Invaluable skills.
After undergrad, it was McKinsey for a bit, then back to Harvard for business school.
Right. And HBS is where she really noticed that pattern women holding back, sitting at the back, not speaking up.
attributing success to luck, maybe.
Exactly. Things that directly fed into the ideas in Lean In years later. She also built important connections there, lifelong collaborators, always good at networking.
Then comes the career takeoff. Treasury Department. Pretty young, right?
Amazingly young. Chief of Staff to Secretaries Rubin and then Summers. She was only 29.
Wow. Dealing with international financial crises, debt relief. That's high-level stuff.
Huge responsibility. Really shows the trust they had in her. Her ability to learn fast and lead under immense pressure. Must have built incredible confidence.
Then the jump to Google in 2001. That must have seemed like a massive risk at the time.
Oh, definitely. Leaving a top government job for a tech startup, people probably thought she was crazy.
But she took Summer's advice. The rocket ship advice.
Yep. Find a rocket ship and get on it. Prioritize growth, potential, over established prestige.
And that move was pivotal.
Transformative. It taught her about calculated risks, betting on the future.
Oh,
and she absolutely crushed it at Google, built their whole advertising business, basically.
The engine that still drives so much of the internet economy, that's where she got the reputation as an operational whiz.
Exactly. And developed her jungle gym idea. Careers aren't just ladders. They're about moving sideways, exploring different things.
Okay. Then 2008, Mark Zuckerberg comes calling. Facebook.
Right. And Facebook then, remember, it was big with college kids, but the business side, still very uncertain.
Her job was to fix that. Is COO.
Pretty much. She came in, built the monetization strategy, scaled the operations,
turned
it into the global giant it became. Huge role.
And then fast forward to 2013, Lean In publishes. Becomes this massive cultural thing.
Global phenomenon. Spawns a foundation, the Lean In circles. She's suddenly this major feminist spokesperson.
But then, just 2 years later, unimaginable tragedy. Her husband, Dave Goldberg, dies suddenly.
Yeah, incredibly sudden. At age 47. Just devastating.
How did that change things for her publicly and maybe personally?
Well, she said it forced her to really confront the limits of her own advice. You know, leaning in is one thing, but dealing with that kind of loss, being a single mom in a huge job, it added a whole new layer.
She shared that vulnerability in her next book, Option B, right?
Yes, in 2017. It showed a different side, not just ambition, but resilience, grief. It definitely added depth to her public image, showed that even powerful people face profound loss.
And then, wrapping up that phase, she steps down from Meta in 2022.
Right. End of an era at the company, but signaling a shift for her towards her foundation, philanthropy. Maybe focusing more on those systemic issues.
So bringing it back to the book itself, Lean In, what's the absolute core idea driving it?
At its heart, it's about individual agency, but within the context of systemic constraints. So yes, there are real barriers out there for women.
Structural problems, biases.
Absolutely, and she acknowledges those. But she also argues that women sometimes hold themselves back. Internalized biases, self-limiting beliefs.
So it's this dual focus, external obstacles and internal ones.
Exactly, that's the foundation.
And her own worldview seems, well, very optimistic, meritocratic almost, like talent and hard work will win out.
Fundamentally, yes, which you can see as both a driving force for her, but also, yeah, where some of the controversy comes in.
Because not everyone feels they operate in a system where merit alone guarantees success.
Precisely. And that concept of leaning in, it flows directly from that belief. Be active, pursue goals, speak up, take your seat.
Don't wait to be asked. Don't wait for things to be perfect.
Right. It's based on her own path being assertive, taking those calculated risks. But it does imply a certain level of control over your situation that, well, not everyone feels they have.
What was her motivation, do you think, for putting it all out there? More than just her story.
Oh, definitely. She talks about feeling this responsibility. Having reached the top, she felt she needed to send the elevator back down, help other women rise.
A pragmatic approach, maybe? Working for change within the system?
Yeah, more incremental improvements than, say, tearing the whole thing down. And interestingly, losing her husband seemed to deepen that drive, especially around things like workplace flexibility, support for working parents. It added this really personal layer beyond just pure ambition.
That experience makes her take on adversity quite powerful, doesn't it? That mix of data, emotion, building support.
Yes, and reframing challenges as chances to learn and build resilience, it really pushes you, the listener, to think about where responsibility lies. Is it all on the individual, all on the system, or this messy middle ground?
Which brings us back to that dual focus. What really stands out to you about tackling both individual action and systemic issues together?
For me, it's the acknowledgement of complexity. It's rarely just one thing, is it? We need both.
Empowering
individuals and fixing the broken structures. It's not either.
Right. Okay, let's pivot to some of those specific moments, those turning points in her life that really shapes these ideas.
Great idea.
First, that Harvard econ exam fail, the C grade. Seems small maybe, but what was the real lesson there?
I think it was profound resilience. And maybe even more importantly, learning that asking for help is okay. It's strength, not weakness. Confronting that fear of imperfection head on.
That's huge. Okay, second, deciding to join Google in 2001. The rocket ship.
Yeah, leaving the safe, prestigious government job for a tech startup nobody was sure about.
What did that teach her, beyond just taking a risk?
It was about prioritizing growth over status, betting on the future, on potential. And it validated her whole jungle gym idea. Your career path doesn't have to be linear. You can move sideways, explore.
Makes sense. Third pivotal moment, negotiating her Facebook COO offer with Zuckerberg in 2008. The story where her husband urged her to push back.
Yes. This one is so central to lean in. She was ready to just accept the first offer.
Why? Fear of seeming.
Yeah.
Difficult, greedy.
Exactly. Confronting her own internalized bias about women in negotiation. But she did it, got a much better offer, and it became this incredibly powerful example of self-advocacy.
Showing women maybe what they might be leaving on the table.
Not just financially, but in terms of valuing themselves and setting precedence.
Okay, I also really like the pregnancy parking story at Google. Seems almost minor, but feels significant.
It really is. Struggling with the long walk while pregnant, finally asking for closer parking spots.
The founders were like, oh, never thought of that.
Pretty much. It showed her and us the power of just speaking up about lived experiences. It highlighted unconscious bias. The system wasn't designed with pregnant women in mind, simply because that perspective wasn't initially there.
Underscores why representation matters, even for seemingly small things.
Totally. And finally, number five, the 2010 TED Talk, Why We Have Too Few Women Leaders. She was apparently reluctant to do it.
Feared being pigeonholed as just talking about women's issues.
Right. But she did it, and it just exploded. Millions of views.
What made that so transformative?
It showed her there was this massive, untapped hunger for this conversation. It gave her the confidence, the mandate, really, to write Lean In. It launched her from being a successful executive to being this global thought leader.
Okay, so immense success, huge platform. But it wasn't smooth sailing. Let's talk challenges, controversies. What were the day-to-day obstacles like for her in those male-dominated worlds?
Well, based on her accounts, it was the stuff many women still face. Being the only woman in the room, often.
Ideas getting ignored or maybe credited to a man later.
That classic scenario, yeah. Facing different standards for behavior assertiveness in men is leadership. In women, it can be something else.
Dealing with imposter syndrome, too, despite her achievements.
Absolutely. Constantly feeling like you have to prove yourself, maybe more than male peers do.
And then the big one,
yeah.
The privilege critique after Lean In came out. That really hit a nerve, didn't it?
Oh, massively. The core argument was, this advice works if you're Sheryl Sandberg, with nannies, resources, flexibility. What about the rest of us?
Critics felt it ignored the huge structural barriers, like discrimination, the cost of childcare, inflexible workplaces.
Exactly. And that it put too much pressure back on individual women to just lean harder into a system that might be fundamentally broken for them.
It really sparked that crucial debate. Individual effort versus systemic change. Where does the burden lie?
And a debate that's still very much alive.
Then layered on top of that, the issues at Facebook Meta, the controversies around privacy misinformation. How did that affect her standing? It definitely complicated her image. Being second in command at a company facing such intense criticism, it inevitably damaged her credibility for some.
Raised questions about, well, the alignment between her feminist message and the company's impact.
Right. That tension became really difficult to navigate. It highlighted the tough ethical spots you can find yourself in at that level of corporate power.
But she hasn't stayed static. How has she evolved, maybe in response to the critiques or her own experiences?
There's definitely been an evolution. She has acknowledged the critiques, the book's limitations. In later talks and writing, you see much more emphasis on structural change, on intersectionality.
Recognizing that different women face different barriers based on race, class, etc.
Exactly. The Lean In Foundation also broadened its focus, talking about allyship for men. And option B, after her husband's death, brought in that whole dimension of resilience through tragedy, acknowledging that sometimes you can't just lean in to grief.
So it added nuance, a recognition that life throws things at you that individual willpower alone can't fix.
I think so. It makes you reflect, doesn't it? How do we balance pushing ourselves individually while also pushing for those bigger systemic changes we need? It's not easy.
Not easy at all. So thinking about her legacy, what stands out professionally?
Well, architect of the modern internet ad model, essentially. At Google, then Facebook. That's huge.
Redefined what a COO could be too, right? Not just operations, but a public voice.
Absolutely. A global influencer from inside a corporation. And her management style, data plus emotional intelligence, that influenced a lot of people.
And culturally. Societally.
Huge impact. She mainstreamed the conversation about gender equality in business, gave us language like lean in, sit at the table, tiara syndrome.
The idea of waiting to be noticed instead of asking.
Right. Plus the foundation, the circles, creating actual networks and support, inspiring women in STEM and leadership. You can't discount that.
And on a more human level.
Normalizing talk about work-life balance, the struggles for men and women, and option B really resonated, talking openly about grief rebuilding. That vulnerability was powerful.
Emphasizing community, support networks too. Success isn't solo.
Exactly. So how relevant is all this today?
Well, the issues haven't gone away, have they? Gender inequality, work-life pressures. If anything, things like the pandemic maybe highlighted them even more.
For sure. And her framework, individual action plus systemic advocacy, you could apply that model to other big challenges we face, like racial inequality or climate change.
It also raises that point about responsibility, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you have privilege, power, a platform, how do you use it for broader good?
And how complex that can be. Okay, so let's boil this down. As we wrap up our deep dive on Sheryl Sandberg, we've got three final takeaways for you.
First, an emotional insight. What's that gut-level feeling we take away?
It's that powerful lesson about imposter syndrome, that feeling of being a fraud. It's often a sign of ambition, not weakness. Even someone like Sandberg felt it. The goal isn't to eliminate fear, it's to act bravely despite it.
Okay. Second, an intellectual insight. What's the key idea or framework?
I think her biggest contribution there is framing gender inequality as this complex mix. Mm. It's internal barriers, how women might hold themselves back, and external systemic barriers, bias, policy issues. You have to tackle both.
Right. It's not one or the other. And finally, a universal insight, the practical takeaway for anyone.
It's the power of that question she poses. What would you do if you were not afraid? That challenge pushes anyone to identify their fears and think about moving past them in your career, relationships, anywhere.
So we've covered a lot. Sandberg's life, the ideas in Lean In, its impact, which is clearly complicated but also undeniable. As you listening reflect on all this, maybe think about an area in your own life. Could be work, could be personal. Where are you maybe leaning back a little?
And what's just one small thing, one concrete step you could maybe take to lean in or advocate for yourself or maybe advocate for someone else in that situation?
It's all about continuing to explore that balance, isn't it? Between what we can do individually and the systemic changes we still need. It's an ongoing conversation. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.